Slay your Christian neighbors, or by them be slain. Pulpiteers are spouting effervescence will. God above is calling you to rob and rape and kill. All your acts are sanctified by the Lamb on high. If you love the Holy Ghost, go murder, pray, and die. Onward, Christian soldiers, rip and tear and smite. Let the gentle Jesus bless your dynamite. Splinter skulls with shrapnel, fertilize the sod. Folks who do not speak your tongue deserve the curse of God. Smash the doors of every home, pretty maiden sees. Use your might and sacred right to treat them as you please. Onward, Christian soldiers, eat and drink your fill. Rob with bloody fingers, Christ okays the bill. Steal the farmers' savings, take their grain and meat. Even though the children starve, the Saviour's bums must eat. Burn the peasants' cottages, orphans' leave bereft. In Jehovah's holy name, wreak ruin right and left. Onward, Christian soldiers, drench the land with gore. Mercy is a weakness that all the gods abhor. Bayonet the babies, jab the mothers too. Hoist the cross of Calvary to hallow all you do. File your bullets' noses flat, poison every well. God decrees your enemies must all go straight to hell. Onward, Christian soldiers, blighting all you meet. Trampling human freedom under pious feet. Praise the Lord whose dollar sign dupes his favored race. Make the foreign trash respect your bullion brand of grace. Trust in mock salvation, serve as pirates' tools. History will say of you that pack of goddamned fools.
Hello, this is Kevin Annis, and it's Here We Stand. It's November 12th, and that song you heard, Christians at War, was actually an old Wobbly song. The Wobblies were the IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World, and they were the ones who actually stopped war. They and their comrades around the world took direct action to stop war, stop the transportation of arms. They didn't just talk about it, they did it. And that's kind of the theme of today. We're going to be talking about not war in the abstract, a war many miles away, but the war at home. And that's something that's especially important to us now, because we recognize that the war at home is the more particularly insidious one, because we can't see it. It's right in our own backyard. And voices you're going to hear today are survivors of that war in Canada, the genocide in the, not just the so-called Indian residential schools, the Indian hospitals and others, voices that the system is trying to wipe out and have you forget, because they're witnesses to the crimes that are carrying on. Now, I know if you're like me, you like to be listened to. And today, the 15 voices you're going to hear of these men and women, half of them are dead now. Half of these witnesses who you'll be hearing today have died. And I remember sitting in healing circles with them, and the most important thing to them was simply to be heard, to be listened to. Because if you're not listened to, and you probably know this feeling, if you're not listened to, the world seems dead around you, as are the people. And that's why we keep these voices alive here on the show. Now, this is just a few technical details. This show on today on November 12th is our last one until the new year. We're taking a break during part of November and December to recalibrate and re-plan. And the first Sunday in January of 2018, we'll be back January 7th. So please tune in, same time, same links on that at that time. And the other thing is that one of the things that are pretty obvious in the course of our work is that those of you out here who are listening are very much on your own. And when we talk about the war at home, an example I gave last week is how people who go up against the system, very quickly their kids are grabbed. I know of one man up in Kelowna, British Columbia right now, who simply by contacting the government of Canada and the Crown and told them he considered himself outside their jurisdiction. His children were grabbed that same day, and he's still struggling to get them back. Now, this is the war we're talking about as we speak. So we think it's very important. If you go to our sites, murderbydecree.com, itccs.org, we remember these people who are now suffering for simply taking a stand. And let me just, before we get into listening to some of these voices, let me remind us of a few things. It's fine to be against war, and this Remembrance Day service is supposed to be an all-people's Remembrance Day where we stand against war at every level, but we can't actually be at war when we depend on and profit from it so much, because the hard reality is that our permanent arms economy is what sustains our standard of living and privileges. We pay for war with our taxes. We benefit from it materially. Even our pension retirement funds are drawn from the profits of their arms industry. That's true about every religion on the planet, and starting with the Vatican Incorporated. We all profit from the arms industry. And so in practice, any of us can really say we're against war in the flesh. We are in our words, but not in practice. The only way we would be in practice if we refused to pay our taxes. With our bodies, we blockaded the Army recruitment offices. We stopped the shipment of arms and uranium overseas that exterminate other people. And we'd be telling every soldier in the world to disobey their orders to kill. But the reality is that that's a costly thing to do. And the few of us who've ever tried to do that, the boot of the system comes down on us very quickly. And so we recognize that there is one war we can stop. And that's the war at home, and that's the theme of today's show. The war at home is the war inside ourselves and the war in our own communities. And like I mentioned, we're going to listen to some of those voices now. These tapes that you're going to be listening to today, they come from the records of the International Common Law Court of Justice, where we put Canada and the Crown of England and the Vatican on trial, and its churches, for these crimes against humanity. You're going to hear 15 voices today, and we'll listen to that first segment now, and then we'll be back after that.
How are you going to do that? How are you going to get the person who was responsible for all these deaths, you know, this mass genocide, how are you going to get them to investigate themselves? Because it's not going to happen unless you take it outside of Canada and go in a higher level and charge them internationally, because that's the only way I believe that these criminals would be brought to justice.
Hello and welcome. My name is Kevin Ann at Eagle Strong Voice, and I'm the advisor to the Citizens Prosecutor's Office of the International Common Law Court of Justice. I especially welcome today all of our citizen prosecutors and esteemed judges from 7 countries around the world, as well as legal and government observers from Europe, North America, and Australia, the world media, and people of conscience everywhere who are tuning in today. Our court came into permanent session early in November to address the first case in our docket, in the matter of intentional genocide by church and state in Canada, and the guilt and liability for crimes against humanity on the part of the officers of the Vatican and the Roman Catholic Church, the Anglican Church, and the United Church of Canada, as well as the Government of Canada and the Crown of England. The opening session of our court, posted at www.itccs.org, reveals considerable evidence to prove beyond any reasonable doubt that all of the first three of five definitions of genocide established under international law occurred deliberately and with a premeditated purpose in the Indian residential school system and Indian hospitals established and run by these churches and governments in Canada for over a century. In the weeks since that first session of our court, and because of the wide public exposure that our work has received around the world, our prosecutor's office has been deluged with new evidence from many dozens of men and women who survived the horror of Indian residential schools across Canada. We're still in the process of compiling all of this evidence to present it in an online presentation that will complete our case concerning genocide in Canada by church and state. We expect to have this material ready for presentation in the new year, sometime during January. Be sure to check our website, www.itccs.org, for more news about this upcoming posting. In the meantime, we're offering samples of this new and shocking evidence to you today following this introduction. We urge our 58 citizen prosecutors and others to refresh their memory of the complete evidence in this first case by reviewing our November 6th online posting at itccs.org in order to place what you will receive today and in the new year in a complete context and understanding. Let me add that for the record, none of the defendants named in our first case, save one, has responded to our public summons issued to them as 32 fiduciary officers of these church and state corporations. These officers include Stephen Harper, Prime Minister of Canada, Elizabeth Windsor, so-called Queen of England, Joseph Ratzinger, so-called Pontiff of the Church of Rome, and other heads of various churches and corporations. The one respondent to our summons, John Molloy, has not contested the charges made against him as an officer of the Canadian government, nor has he nor any of the other persons duly summoned offered counter-evidence or arguments to challenge or deny the evidence we have so far presented that charges them on two criminal counts, namely of engaging in a criminal conspiracy and of complicity in crimes against humanity. Our prosecutor's office is therefore obliged to continue our case against these defendants with the understanding that after the presentation of the rest of our case and our closing arguments in January, these defendants will have a third and final opportunity to present arguments in their own defense after we conclude our case. Let me say in closing that besides the increased involvement of Aboriginal survivors of genocide in Canada in our work, our court has received new offers of legal, judicial, and political assistance from several governments in Europe and Asia, and from numerous human rights and Aboriginal organizations in over a dozen countries. We look forward to bringing our evidence and verdicts into the courts of other nations for effective remedies and enforceable judgments against the named defendants. Once more, on behalf of the Prosecutor's Office of the Court, I thank you all for your steadfast endurance and patience as we create history together by bringing to justice those responsible for some of the most heinous crimes in human history. We ask you to share what you viewed today and stay tuned to itccs.org for more announcements in the new year. Help us to use our court as one means to take action based on these undeniable truths, for the helpless and for all those who hunger and thirst for justice. I thank you.
Who's going to listen?
But when you enter through these doors,
yeah,
you're like a dead kid walking, a dead man walking. You are not human. Your history means nothing. Your childhood means nothing.
When we got to the residential school, we never did go to school. And we were never fed. We're always starving. And the mental abuse was there, the physical abuse. And they treated us like animals. They'd throw food at us.
My name's Harry Wilson. I saw a person throw a baby outside dumping, put on burning residential school. She was pregnant and they cut open and threw it down in a dump by Jay Andrews and some supervisor. One of the staff on the supervisor, yeah.
When you saw it happen?
Yeah.
When I was there, and the screams we used to hear in the girls' dorm, and, you know, It wasn't screams of being somebody in pain. It was screams of some girl getting raped.
They had their choice of victims. And this is the washroom here, and the molestations would go on in here also. And there was absolutely no place. The children were absolutely defenseless. The RCMP, even if they were told, they would not come. There's no record of the RCMP ever laying one charge against the pedophiles, mm-hmm. against the people who assaulted us and assaulted our friends. I mean, beat them down. This is not just a few slaps on the wrist here. Boards, 2x4s, whips, anything, even shovels. And not one charge has ever been laid. And we don't know, because I didn't go to school here, and we don't know where the graveyard is, and we don't know where the bodies are. But if it's like Brandon, we know that there's bodies out there.
What is it, Pukulica? There was babies' bodies inside the walls, the buildings. Nothing but dead babies.
Kids would be screaming throughout the night, kicked right out of their beds and flying in air and landing screaming. So we live in constant fear.
This is where, late one night, there were three little ones, tiny little ones that were brought in by their mother. They were left here. And they cried so much that the nun took them and put them in this room here. This was our storage room for our Sunday shoes and winter coats, rubber boots. They were stored in here. And those little ones were brought in there. And we heard them cry for a long time. All of a sudden, you'd hear like that, you know? And we never heard them after that. And we never saw them the next day. We don't know. We asked what happened to them. Nobody knows what happened to those three little ones. That was in that room in there. We can't open it. We can't go in there.
So they brought my father into the barn, and they said, okay, do you believe in God and all of this stuff? And he said, no, I can't. I've got my own religion. And they said, okay, fine. And they stripped him down naked. They sat him on a chair, tied his hands down, tied his feet down, spread his legs apart, and used probably one of the first cattle prods, electric cattle prods. And there was a lot of electricity going through it because Dad said there was a huge cable at the end of it, and they just had a big round thing at the head of it. And they just touched him with it, and they just barely touched his penis. And his penis immediately flew up into the air, and he didn't scream out. He would not scream, but he said the pain literally went through his whole body. The electric shock went through his whole body, and they did this about 10 times to him, and he would not give in to them, and finally he just passed out from the pain. But his penis and his balls were his testicles were so swollen and so burned that it took him at least 2 months to recover.
A lot of us have corns from here to there to there. Mine are all under here. And see, my feet are like this. Because of the small shoes. All this here was always infected with the skin breaking from the rubbing. And this toe, this little toe, this big toe, there's just squished this way here. And this is how you have to wear your shoes.
They should declare it
national site of tragedy or something. They should declare this place, you know, a monument to the churches and Canada's spiritual adultery and to the genocide they committed. If there was ever a place, this should be it. There's absolutely no reason for these places, none whatsoever, except one thing: genocide.
I hope we're back. Anyway, folks, this is the reality of Canada. These tortures and murders happened with your money just a few years ago. The voices you heard. And we're back. Well, people, that happened in your name with your tax money just not too long ago, and it's still going on today. Those were the voices of Peter Yellowquill, George Brown, Harry Wilson, Pierre Kruger, Irene Starr, Lillian Shirt, and Wilf Price. All of them went to either Catholic, Anglican, or United Church residential schools, and guess what? They got a bit of money and an apology, and so it all made everything better. I don't know about you folks, but I am sick and tired now of Canada, of being in this sickening, godforsaken place that would do these crimes to children and then get away with it. Not one person, except in our common law court trial, not one person was ever brought to trial for any of these crimes because they're sick, dead souls. Only sick, dead souls can do these crimes and then never even talk about it until they get lawsuits facing them. So the real question here is not so much what happened to those children as what happened to us to allow us to do these things and to allow us to have no feelings about it still. Murderbydecree.com, all the hard evidence. A book you won't find in libraries or bookstores because it's been censored. Every time it appears in a library, it's destroyed. So, yes, I'm angry. I'm outraged, as you should be. Question is, what do we do with this outrage? It's a fuel for action, but only if you're awake, only if you're willing to act. And the thing we have to realize is that we live in a condition of continual war. And that's kind of leading us to the next part. The next part of the show, because formally speaking, this is the official ending of something called the War to End All Wars, which of course didn't end any wars. Whether it's the war against Native people or the war against each other, these conflicts carry on. One bright note, though, that happened in World War I, at least bright from our family's perspective, is my grandfather, Ross Annett, who was 19 years old at the time, struggling in the trenches of the Somme in Belgium and France in World War I. His life was actually saved by a German soldier. I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for the so-called enemy who saved Grandpa's 19-year-old life and brought him to safety. So I dedicate this next song to that unknown German soldier who saved the Annett family. And allow me to be here today with you folks. We're going to hear Christmas in the Trenches, which describes an event where Grandpa actually took part in the fraternization of Allied and German soldiers through a number of the years of World War I. After that, we're going to hear more voices of the Canadian genocide, and I'll be back before the end of the show. Thank you.
My name is Francis Tolliver. I come from Liverpool. 2 years ago, the war was waiting for me after school. To Belgium and to Flanders, to Germany to hear. I fought for king and country I loved dear. 'Twas Christmas in the trenches where the frost so bitter hung. The frozen fields of France were still, no Christmas song was sung. Our families back in England were toasting us that day. Their brave and glorious lads so far away. Lying with my messmate on the cold and rocky ground, when across the lines of battle came a most peculiar sound. Says I, now listen up, me boys, each soldier strained to hear, as one young German voice sang out so clear. He's singing bloody well, you know, my partner says to me. Soon one by one each German voice joined in harmony. The cannons rested silent, the gas clouds rolled no more. as Christmas brought us respite from the As they were finished and Reverend Boz was spent, God rest ye merry gentlemen, struck up some lads from Kent. All the next they sang was Steely Knocked, 'Tis Silent Night, says I, and in two tongues one song filled up that sky. There's someone coming towards us, frontline sentry cried. All sights were fixed on one lone figure trudging from their side. His truce flag, like a Christmas star, shone on that plain so bright as he bravely strode unarmed into the night. Then one by one on either side walked into no man's land, with neither gun nor bayonet. Met there hand to hand, we shared some secret brandy and wished each other well, and in a flare-lit soccer game we gave him hell. We traded chocolates, cigarettes, and photographs from home, these sons and fathers far away from families of their own. Sanders played his squeeze box and they had a violin, this curious and unlikely band of men. Soon daylight stole upon us, France was France once more. With sad farewells we each began to settle back to war. But the question haunted every heart that lived that wondrous night, whose family have I fixed within my sights? 'Twas Christmas in the trenches where the frost so bitter hung. Frozen fields of France were warmed as songs of peace were sung. For the walls they'd kept between us to exact the work of war had been crumbled and were gone forevermore. Name is Francis Tolliver, in Liverpool I dwell. Each Christmas comes since World War I, I've learned its lessons well. But the ones who call the shots won't be among the dead and lame, and on each end of the rifle we're the same.
This is Kevin Ann at Eagle Strong Voice. On November 5th, history was made by the convening of the first International Common Law Court of Justice. This court was convened to judge the guilt of heads of state and heads of churches for crimes against humanity and for unspeakable crimes against children. The full proceedings of the opening session of this court can now be viewed online at www.itccs.org. But for your own edification, and to promote the work of the court and the cause of justice, we have created this short sample of some of the key testimonies in this first session of the court. We ask you to post this sample online and especially share it with your local media, educators, and other sympathetic people. The second session of our court will convene during the third week in November 2012. We ask you to keep posted for that at itccs.org. Thank you.
That's okay. It's a big mistake when people say we were treated good. No way.
So after my brother got better, he needed to go back to the mush hole. And we didn't go back for that next year. But there was some time after that, during the time that that we were out of school for the summer, that he had, and we were going to go back. And he said, you know what happened to all of those kids that were there at the mush hole? He said, do you remember that? And I said, yeah. I said, our dorm was just full of girls. And he said, yeah, so was ours full of boys. And he said, do you know what happened to them? And I said, no. And he said, they called in the army and they took them to the army base and they shot them. They stood them all along this big hole and they shot them, and was as when the bullets hit them, they fell into the hole. And he said when they were all done, he said those that hadn't fallen into the hole, some of them were still alive. He said some of them were still alive in the hole. And he said they came along with, I want to say, a bulldozer. That what comes to my mind, but I'm not really sure that my brother had said a bulldozer. They came along with a big machine anyway, and they shoved them all in that big hole and they covered it up. And he says, that's what happened to them. And I must have been about 8, I guess, or 7 or 8, somewhere through there. Let's see, that must have been 43 or 44.
Here we are, second day of the dig, near the mush hole. And this is an area about 100 yards from the school, where we found consistent bone samples. And these regular types of buttons, probably off of, well, clothing, obviously. But the interesting thing is, here and at the Glebe site, they're of the same style as if they're off a standard uniform or something. Could be a child's button off a school uniform.
Scary. Finding those little skulls in there. What were those little skulls? Where did they come from?
Could you describe what they look like?
Tiny little ones. Two little skulls. Tiny baby ones.
And they're right here.
I feel that fear we had running upstairs to that door.
And I spent 5 years in the Canadian government calls it residential schools, but really these were prisoner of war camps. I was one in the one called the Mohawk Institute. Starved us, beat us, froze us, and it was horrific. There was no controls in the place. Kids were always getting beat up or being put through various torture rituals. A lot of the kids were tortured in there. They were made to hang off hot pipes until they couldn't hold on anymore and they just fell to the floor from the roof. And they were beaten. Whenever someone felt like it, made to hold on to electric fences. They were...
And the ministry found out I was pregnant, and they told me to have an abortion. And after I have the abortion, to have a tubal ligation so I won't have any more children. I said if I didn't have a tubal ligation, then I would never see my daughter Patricia again.
Furnace going burning 24/7, which was totally out of bounds, and me and a friend witnessed two of them, the sisters or brothers, taken look like little bodies under white wrappings or white cloth, and put into the furnace. And the Queen came and visited for about 3 days, I don't know how long it was, I think it was about 3 days actually, and a lot of children went missing there. Many children that weren't cooperative, like myself, wasn't cooperative, and they were put into with the children who were sick with at the end of the dormitory. They kept the sickies there, the ones who were sick with tuberculosis, and they put me and my brother Ernie in with the ones who were sick because we wouldn't comply.
In the same room with people who had TB, they didn't separate us.
Then we were forced to play with them. The nuns made us play with those kids. We didn't want to get sick either, but they were forcing us to play with those kids. And also, they made some of them sleep with the other kids.
I would have loved to have seen the perpetrators severely punished for all of this. And I would have, the greatest thing I would want to see is the Church of England get barred from practicing in Canada.
It's just insane. Like, you don't murder children and get away with it. And I work every day to protect children, and it just really bothers me that so many of our children have been killed. And nothing's ever been done about it. Like, you read about it, and there's information on it all over the place, but nothing's ever been done about it. So why should these people, the churches and the government and Indian Affairs, were all in on this as well, why should they get away with killing our children? It's just not right, and something needs to be done about it.
Something needs to be done about it. Well, okay, folks who are listening, I want to apologize. I was rattled a bit earlier in the show because of the technical foul-ups, and it's very difficult to do these programs because it's not an abstract issue for me. It's been my life for 25 years. It's cost me everything in my life. It's cost me my own kids. It's cost me everything that people consider normal. And so it kind of makes you, and I talk about this in some of my books, it tends to make you a perfectionist when you're a survivor. You want everything to go right so it doesn't mess up again, either for you or other people. So things like technical gaffes will throw me briefly, and that's why I was a bit off my game earlier. But I'm back now, and I just want to talk to you, frankly, for the last few minutes of the show, because we're not going to be able to do this again for a number of weeks, not till first Sunday in January when we're back on the air. But when Cheryl Squire, and the last woman who you heard speak was Cheryl Squire from the Mohawk Nation, she's one of the elders who invited me to come and do the dig there at the mush hole where we found those bones that turned out to be of a young girl, those buttons off the school uniform. And then, of course, the dig was shut down and all of our work smeared and discredited all over the Internet so people would forget, as you mostly have forgotten. But she said something needs to be done about it, and we've tried. This is what we've done over the last number of years. We've said, under international law, the regimes that did these crimes are not legitimate. They're rogue nations under the law, whether that be the Crown of England, the Vatican, Canada, and its churches. They can't receive any funding, they don't have any legitimacy, their property and assets and authority are all forfeited. And anyone who participates in those institutions are colluding in a crime against humanity. So it puts all Canadians, for example, in the same moral position that the Nazis were after the war. But the thing is, the Nazis lost their war, so they were put on trial. We won our war, so we put on the show trials, which make the crime seem clean. But those of us who are part of the oppressor nation who can't be part of it anymore have to break from that nation. And this is why the whole plan for the Republic of Kanata, 2.5 years ago, we tried to establish this. And of course, everything we try to do is beyond the experience and the knowledge of the people we're trying to reach. It's a small number we're trying to reach, the people who have come to this conclusion. that we need something different now. We cannot live under the old regime anymore because it's continuing its crime against children, the earth, against all of our liberties. And we have no basis to complain if we're part of that system and funding it and allowing it to continue. So we have to split. We have to reclaim our minds and create something different. We have to declare our independence from this genocidal corporate system and its religion and its continuing crimes. There's only a handful of us who are trying to do that. But what we're doing, I recognized the other day, is we're planting seeds that are not going to manifest right away. They're going to grow up in other hearts and minds, in other lives that are freer than the present generation. And so I plan in the new year to talk more at an inspirational level. What do we need to keep ourselves going, the handful of us? And this show, as I mentioned, the reason we changed the name from Radio Free Canada to Here We Stand in honor of the Reformation, and Martin Luther saying, "Here I stand, I can do no other." Here We Stand means we are addressing that remnant, the minority of you out there who know what has to happen now, but you're on your own. Most of you who are that remnant are listening to this in small towns on your own, wondering what the hell can you do in the face of this monstrosity. But we have written a series of books that'll help you in that. And that's why it's disappointing to see so few of these books in circulation. I keep going to Amazon and create space accounts, and nobody's buying these books. But this is something we need to do. We need to get these books in circulation. MurderByDecree.com, Murder by Decree, The Crime of Genocide in Canada, A Manual for Whistleblowers and Hellraisers, A Common Law Training Manual. All of these books you can see at Amazon.com if you put in Kevin Annett, the name. And it's our obligation to get this truth in continued circulation so that the truth doesn't die. Because we're next. It could happen to any one of us, and is happening to us all the time. You know, I get reports all the time from people like the fellow up in Kelowna that I mentioned, whose children are being raped as we speak, or being passed around in a child trafficking network run by the Ministry of Children and Families up there. Guy called Curtis Baker, Ministry of Children and Families in Kelowna. He's the one who said to our brother Paul, who had his children taken, "Well, yes, we know they're in the home of the child rapist, but they're friends with the police," he said with a big smile on his face. Curtis Baker, why are you defending child rapists in Kelowna? Question to answer. Maybe somebody can call up Curtis Baker at the Ministry of Children and Family office in Kelowna and ask him why he's putting children in the homes of known child rapists. And threatening to imprison Paul, their father, when he talks about it. Curtis appeared at Paul's door the other day and said, "You're going to go in into a mental institute if you keep making these allegations." Even though Curtis himself admitted the allegations were true. This is the war we're under now, people. Folks like Paul, an honest man who's trying to defend his children, are going to end up in an insane asylum or in jail or dead because they're challenging the system. They're disappearing all the time, these people. And so it may be frightening because you figure immediately, well, geez, what's going to happen to me if I talk about this? But it could happen to you at any moment. We're under a condition of war. And only those who are under fire know that a war is going on. You should remember that. If you're not under fire, you can have the illusion that there isn't a war. And I'm all right, Jack. But we're not. As one of the folks whose testimony you heard today said, these churches should be barred from operating in Canada. Well, the way we bar them is not by relying on the government, their co-partner in crime, from taking action against them. You can write all the petitions about denying tax exemptions to these churches, which has to happen under international law, and yet the government's not going to do it. We have to do it. We need community sanctions. We've got to go into those churches and shut them down. We've got to take the money in the collection plate and hand it out to the poor and say, you don't have the right to collect this money under international law because you're a convicted genocidal institution. Return that money to the community. Make citizen arrests on these child-raping priests. We've laid out how to do it. We even conduct occasional training programs for people to equip them how to do it, and yet it's like standing on the edge of a cliff. Nobody will take that next step to actually do it. Nothing that I can see, and I'm very connected to this movement. I don't see it happening. I see people talking about it and not doing anything while the children continue to die as we speak. You know, people say in response to this, and we've got about 5 minutes left, but I just want to end on this note, that people say, look, Kevin, you should be happy. There's reports all over the world of Pizzagate and all these Hollywood stars are being named now. Well, listen, folks, this is PSYOPs going on. It's called an inoculation program. An inoculation is when you're given something to make yourself, put it this way, you're given the media give you innocuous events to focus on. Okay, so Richard Dreyfuss molested a woman 31 years ago, and people's response is to say, oh, well, that's not much. I mean, why are you focusing on this? And after a while, people get psychologically numbed. They get bored and sick of the issue because they hear about it so much. So they become psychologically numbed, so they won't react when the even worse stuff comes out. Now, that's something I witnessed firsthand in Canada. Right before we made all these witnessed exposures of the crimes of genocide, you saw in the media all of these reports of these relatively minor incidents going on until the word residential school was so in people's minds no one wanted to hear anything else. So naturally, when we brought out the real evidence, nobody listened anymore because they were inoculated against the issue. That's what you're getting in the internet now through all this bullshit on supposed exposures of child rapists. The big guys are never exposed. The little fish are, and they want you to feel satisfied and go away now. That's the situation we're under. Our minds are being messed with all the time. And so we need to be prepared and defended against that. I know this is a sermon, but so what? It needs to be said, and nobody else is going to say it. You're not going to hear this from anyone else, just like you're not going to read about this except in our books. Murderbydecree.com, ITCCS.org. Write to me, thecommonland@gmail.com. I'm waiting for your calls, folks. I'm waiting for you to write and say, come on, Kevin, here's a meeting. Let's get this together. Let's stop these crimes. So it's up to you now. The ball is in your court. I'm mortal, believe it or not. I can only do this for so long. I'm 61, and I'm going to do this until I die, till I drop. And even beyond then, my spirit will continue. But if it's not your involvement as well, it's pissing in the wind, brothers and sisters. You need to get on board now. The time is over for procrastination. I need to hear from you. thecommonland@gmail.com. Leave me messages at, in the States, 386-323-5774. That's 386-323-5774. We are going to take back the world. We've started. I told you the hard facts, the bitter facts, but now the truth. We are going to win. I know this. I see it. Like Martin Luther King said, I have seen the promised land, and I know we're going to win, but we're going through a dark time, and it's going to get a lot darker. You think it's bad now, you haven't seen anything yet. And in a way, we deserve everything we get, because we've created this situation. And we need to go through this fire to have the remnant identified and all the dross and the shit on us burned out of ourselves so that we can stand up fully recovered and fully brilliant again as we're meant to be. We have to go through that loss and trial and separation to recover who we are. So don't fear the pain. Don't fear the darkness. It's part of the growing up process. I've learned that God doesn't want us to be happy. God wants us to grow up. And this is part of the growing up process. Now, in that spirit, I want to end, and I will see you all again on January 7th, but hopefully before then, because you're all going to write to me and call me, remember? thecommonland@gmail.com, murderbydecree.com. We'll talk about how to do this. We'll get there, brothers and sisters. We're not giving up. I'm not giving up, and I don't want you to give up. I'm never going to give up on this struggle because the children's lives are at stake and our souls are at stake. And in that sense, I want to end on this note. Martin Luther King, a speech he gave just before he died, he kept getting asked, how long do we have to go through this struggle? And he answers this question. And we'll play this recording going out. Go to our site as well, kevinannett.com. There's more updates and reflections there. And brothers and sisters, until January 7th, I want you to stay strong, stay clear, and be in touch. I thank you. Here's Martin.
I know you're asking today, how long will it take? Somebody's asking, how long will prejudice blind the visions of men? I come to say to you this afternoon, however difficult the moment,
yes, sir,
however frustrating the hour, it will not be long,
no,
because truth crushed earth will rise again.
Yes, sir.
How long? Not long.
Yes, sir.
Because no lie can live forever.
Yes, sir.
How long? Not long.
How long?
Yes, because you shall reap what you sow.
Yes, sir.
How long?
How
not long.
How long?
Not long.
How long?
truth forever on the scaffold, wrong forever on the throne.
Yet
that scaffold sways the future. Behind the dim unknown standeth God within the shadow, keeping watch above his own. How long? Not long. Because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. How long?
Not long.
Because mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He's trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored. He's loosed the fateful lightning of his terrible swift sword. His truth is marching on. He has sounded forth the trumpet that shall never call retreat. He is sifting out the hearts of men before his judgment seat. Oh, be swift, my soul, to answer him. Be jubilant, my feet. Our God is marching on. Glory, hallelujah. Glory, hallelujah.